I'm Gene Pasale, and this is Living History. This show explores the rich heritage of the Brandywine Valley outside Philadelphia, focusing on the people, places, and events over more than 300 years, which have played an important part in our American heritage. Each show highlights a local town, event, or personality who's had a notable influence on our culture. Before we get started, I want to mention that our call-in line, if you have questions or comments, is 610-701-9243. That's 610-701-9243. This day in history, June 1st. In 1864, the Battle of Cold Harbor begins in the latter stages of the Civil War, after the Confederacy had already suffered serious defeats at the critical battles of Gettysburg and Vicksburg. Amazingly, the rebels would hold on for another 9 months, despite chronic shortages of supplies, a hyperinflating rebel currency, which was nearly worthless, and food riots in the streets of many southern cities, which spelled their eventual doom. In 1958, deaf, mute, and blind Helen Keller passes away after an inspiring life of accomplishment, overcoming obstacles that would have crippled most people, touring the world as a motivational speaker, and gaining accolades from statesmen around the globe. Keller's achievements were a testament to the fact that even with enormous limitations, people can overcome their challenges and do great things. And in 1980, a new trend in our society begins, and the world would never be the same as the cable news network comes on the air at 6 p.m. Eastern Time with the first 24-hour news program providing all news all the time, which people at first questioned regarding its appeal to the general public. The format quickly took hold, spawning several imitators and broadening the approaches of the major networks. In one of its greatest accolades, when asked about the reporting on the Gulf War in 1991, Colin Powell said, "The best coverage I've seen is on CNN." Ted Koppel would become its face to the nation. Many people around the world know the name James Michener, the author who will forever be linked with the historical novel, lived in Doylestown, Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and wrote dozens of books covering topics from the Chesapeake Bay, Texas, Poland, space, the nation's centennial, Mexico, and many other themes. Michener became celebrated for his masterful use of words, weaving history and fiction together seamlessly in works such as Tales of the South Pacific, The Bridges at Toko Rhee, Centennial, Chesapeake, and The Covenant. A wonderful museum in Doylestown bears his name, and it attracts huge crowds of visitors every year. The James Michener Art Museum highlights thousands of works of art, including masterful creations by Pennsylvania Impressionists, including Redfield, Garber, Schofield, and others, along with numerous offerings of furniture and local arts and crafts, reflecting the traditions of the Bucks County area. They also have a wide variety of programs, including lectures, concerts, and special exhibits. They even have a display showing the author's work desk, his typewriter, and other objects from the office where he worked for over 35 years. Today we're talking with Lisa Hanover, the CEO and director of the Michener Art Museum, with an opportunity for listeners to learn more about this treasure of art and history open to visitors to enjoy the many programs available to the public. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Gene. Boy, that was a great and comprehensive overview. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. How long have you been there at Michener Art Museum?
I have been the director here for 4 years, so a relatively short tenure after the previous director was here for 24 years.
Oh, a long time.
Yep.
Yeah, and how long have you been the CEO?
The same amount of time. My title is director and CEO, so okay. I get both, you know, the benefits of both.
Okay, so you were brought on as the CEO.
Correct.
Okay, and what are your ongoing responsibilities there at the Michener Art Museum?
Well, it's really my duty to make sure that both the museum staff, the board, and my visitors have the best environment in which to work, in which to visit, in which to enjoy our treasures. And so that old saying that the buck stops here, I'm really responsible for the well-being of this organization and our visitors.
Mm-hmm. And when was the museum built and first opened?
Well, you may know that the Michener Art Museum is actually housed in the original Bucks County Prison, which was built in 1888. It had a pretty long life. It was modeled after the Eastern State Penitentiary architect, so we have a real link with our counterparts in Philadelphia. The prison itself closed in 1986, and the founding fathers of the Michener Art Museum, who were seeking a home to really evolve the cultural presence here, identified the prison as a possible location, and the county commissioner said, we'd like to maintain this landmark. So when you come to us, you walk through the hallowed hallways of the original prison.
Oh, very interesting. And when did it open to the public as the museum?
Right. That was in the fall of 1988. So a very quick two-year turnaround.
Yeah, well, it's almost, what, almost three decades now.
Well, actually, yep, you're right. In 2018, we celebrate our 30th anniversary.
Excellent. I have visited the museum. It is absolutely a wonderful place. I never really knew much about the Pennsylvania Impressionists until I visited the Michener, but you've got a couple of really splendid murals there.
We do.
And really some outstanding works by Redfield, Garber, the Coppedge, and others. What is the mission statement of the Michener Art Museum?
Well, you kind of nailed it on the head. We really were founded to collect, preserve, interpret, and exhibit American art with a focus on the artists of Bucks County, Pennsylvania, the Delaware Valley, and we are the only museum in the world fully dedicated to the Pennsylvania Impressionists and the artisans such as George Nakashima, Paul Evans, Philip Powell, and the other artists who work in a variety of media but founded Bucks County as their locus for creativity.
Interesting. I did meet a gentleman who was an artist several years ago who I believe was one of the latter group of Pennsylvania Impressionists. His name was Ranulph By. Have you heard of Ranulph By?
Well, certainly, and we do collect his work, and we did a major exhibition just last year. Ranulph is beloved in Bucks County. He documented with his watercolors every farm, every barn, every byway. He really was a documentarian, but he also inspired a real passion, and he added a real humanity to his work. And so many people collect his watercolors and the prints that are derived from it. So, yes, Ranulph is really a treasure to this institution.
Now, I hesitate to ask, is he still with us?
He is not with us. His widow is, however, Glenna By.
Okay.
And I worked with her to curate the exhibition that we hosted, a retrospective. So, but, you know, his work lives on.
Yes, yes. He is a wonderful gentleman. I met him probably 15 years ago.
Wow. Did you meet him while he was painting outside?
I believe I was in his studio.
Wow.
Yeah, it was very interesting. And I didn't realize I was meeting a legend, but now I know.
Yeah.
Our listeners here on the show know of the famous author James Michener, who wrote many historic novels, setting the standard, really, in that genre. Just tell us a little bit more about what the museum has related to Michener and his work.
Well, we are so fortunate to hold his name. What we don't hold is his art collection. He and Mari, his wife, were avid art collectors, pretty focused on Japanese woodblock prints and scrolls and mid-century modern painters such as Franz Klein, Motherwell, Calder. That work is all at the University of Texas and the University of Hawaii. We do have his name, we do have an endowment, and we do have his office, because James Michener, born and bred in the Doylestown area, had several homes here and wrote the majority of his novels here.
Now, the office setup that you have displayed, that's actually from his real working office from one of his homes, correct?
That's exactly right. It is almost set up as he had it, with his sound system that he built his own stereo system. And, he was honored with so many awards. He was of the generation that still used a typewriter. He hand-wrote a lot of his manuscripts as well, so we have those on view. He was an avid sports fan, so we have some bats and baseballs. And he also ran for Congress, so we have some of his political memorabilia as well.
Do you have any of his first editions?
We have all of his first editions.
Oh, excellent. In hardback, I assume.
In hardback.
And are any, I'm just going to guess that his books are all for sale there at the museum store?
Yep. We do like to highlight our namesake.
Mm-hmm. Just curious, did they ever produce a series of signed, pallets or what have you that you can put on the books?
That's
his autograph?
That's a really good point, and I don't believe we've ever done that, although I will tell you that Michener was actively engaged in this institution in the early days of its life, and he was passionate about it. The founders engaged he and Mari in significant ways, and while he was living and he was accessible, he certainly would sign books for people. But no, we never had book plates signed.
Interesting.
Darn it.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things to think about. For famous authors, it's always a gem to get, to get an autograph. By the way, I have a kind of a tangential link to James Michener. I did my first master's degree at the University of Texas at Austin.
Well, and, I tell you, they have also dedicated a research area on his behalf, because what you may or may not know is whenever he took on a topic, a subject matter, as you referenced Chesapeake and Texas, Hawaii, the Caribbean, he went and lived in those areas and just did exhaustive research.
Mm-hmm. And I was just going to mention that I've been down to the St. Michael's area, and you can take a ferry ride over to the Robert Morris Inn, where he apparently dined on occasion when he was writing the book Chesapeake. He claimed they had the best crab cakes in America.
Well, they do.
They do. I've actually eaten there several times, and the food is great. We're just about to take a short break for a commercial, and we'll talk a little bit more about James Michener. We are with Lisa Hanover of the Michener Art Museum, and we'll be right back with Living History.
Honey, we need
a springtime getaway.
A springtime getaway. Somewhere with
amazing food.
Amazing food. And
cozy couples lodging.
Right, but not too far away, or
Gettysburg.
Gettysburg.
Yep, Gettysburg.
Okay, but I want award-winning
golf courses.
Horseback riding.
A Firkin Festival.
How do you know all of this?
They have an app.
They have an app?
Yep, at DestinationGettysburg.com.
So, Gettysburg.
Yep, Gettysburg.
Gettysburg, PA. Make your own history.
If you had to choose a roofer, would you choose one with limited experience and knowledge, or would you choose a roofer certified as a master elite contractor by the largest manufacturer in the nation, GAF, a distinction shared by only 3% of the nation's roofers? I'm talking about GP Martini Roofing, who also does siding, windows, doors, and offers an ironclad guarantee that he'll repair or replace any roof for defects within its normal life. GP Martini services Chester, Delaware, Bucks, and Montgomery counties with free estimates and consultation, and does both commercial and residential. Go to their website at martiniroofing.com for special savings, or call 610-873-1696. And also, financing is available with no payments for a full year. Now, what roofer would you call? GP Martini is the answer, 610-873-1696.
You're listening to WCHG 1520 AM, the best radio station in America.
Wait, my check's going to clear, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right, the best station in America.
I'm Gene Pasale, and this is Living History. We're talking with Lisa Hanover, the CEO and director of the James Michener Art Museum in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. Lisa, you mentioned a little bit about James Michener's travels. How much did he actually travel and do research on site for his books? Was he there quite a bit? At the different locations, Chesapeake Bay, et cetera?
He would. He would probably invest about a year in terms of his research for any particular topic. But Doylestown was always his homestead. So he and Mari returned frequently, occasionally keeping a place in the area of which he was writing. And eventually, at the University of Texas, they gave him a permanent office. So they spent a lot of their later years in Texas.
Now, was that his alma mater?
It was not his alma mater. He was a Swarthmore graduate.
Oh, now, I'm wondering why the link with Texas then.
Well, I think because he wanted to write that sweeping novel, and the university was amenable to having him on staff, and I do believe he taught some classes there as well.
Interesting.
So that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, he may have taught classes there when I was there, which was the late 70s to 78 to 80. But that's interesting.
Could very well be.
Very interesting. I'm a huge fan of fine art, and my wife and I have collected many works over the years. You know, the Michener showcases many of the Pennsylvania Impressionists, like Redfield and others. Tell us a little bit about the Pennsylvania Impressionist movement and then their importance.
Well, I tell you, when you think about Impressionism and you think about the great French artists like Monet, but you also think about the motivation of Impressionism, and it's exactly what it means. It is an impression of a scene. It's about using light to document. Well, our painters, as you referenced, Garber and Redfield and Coppedge and Sauter, all took that philosophy, brought it to this very rich visual area, the Delaware River, and they painted in plein air, which is out of doors, which is how the French Impressionists painted. Their works, done at the turn of the century, were valued because they were also documents of a specific time and place. It was because the Michener has brought all those artists together that there is substantial scholarship on the motivation of these artists, on the works that they've accomplished. We, again, are the locus of collecting this genre. So while the PMA, the Metropolitan, the Chicago Art Institute, the LA County Museum of Art may have examples of these artists, we have the very best and the most comprehensive.
Now, were the Pennsylvania Impressionists kind of the second wave of Impressionists?
Yes.
I mean, after the French Impressionists, then they kind of traveled across the pond and came over to the U.S.
Yeah.
Now, I'm just going to guess, were there other states like New York Impressionists or Maryland or Delaware?
And there were pockets. Up on Cape Cod in Massachusetts, there was the Koskob group of artists. Believe it or not, in Ohio, there was a group of Impressionists, and there's a California Impressionist group as well.
Very interesting. How do the Pennsylvania Impressionists fit into the overall scheme of American artists? I mean, I've never heard anybody try to rank them, but what are your views on their fitting into the scheme of art?
That's a really good question because at the beginning of my tenure here, I wanted to expand how the museum interpreted our permanent collection of Pennsylvania Impressionists. So we've expanded our exhibition philosophy, and we're doing the kinds of American art exhibits that fit our artists within that bigger canon. So when you think about the Hudson River School of Painting, when you think about the dramatic photography of Ansel Adams, our artists are linked with them in terms of how they interpret the landscape, how they compose it, represent it, and so it's a great context that we provide.
I've noticed when I did walk through the museum, this is several years back, that some of the Pennsylvania Impressionists shown in your collection are extremely colorful.
Yes.
I mean, a wide palette of colors.
Yes.
A little bit more bold, I should say, than some of the French Impressionists. Were they trying to kind of make a much bolder statement here? Or?
Well, you must be an art historian, Gene, because, you know, that's exactly the point. These artists took a very bold palette, as he said, to express themselves, and some of them also painted much more, I would say, deliberately, so that it's not just these flicks of paint and color, but they're very much more representative, okay, in what they depict. Very few incorporate the human form, and if they do, they're just kind of hinted at. So it's truly about the landscape, the river, the sky, and a sense of feeling mm-hmm. that these artists are trying to capture.
I have always loved landscapes.
Me too.
The landscapes you have there in your museum are absolutely outstanding, and I highly recommend to any of our listeners, if you haven't been to the James Michener Art Museum, you really ought to stop in there if you love fine art. My personal experience with local art made me run across a name that I'm not sure if you're familiar with, a guy named Ed Loper down in Delaware. He was a well-known Wilmington artist, and I believe he just passed away maybe in the last 10 years. Very well-known, but a very kind of a distinctive, I wouldn't call it quite Impressionist, but certainly related to the Impressionist style.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very famous in the Wilmington area.
Well, I'll have to look him up.
Yeah, you have several murals there on the wall, at least a few that I'm aware of. Tell us a little bit about these beautiful works of art which grace your hallways.
Right. Well, you're referencing a major mural by Daniel Garber that was serendipitously, if I pronounce that correctly, two decades ago, because this museum mounted a campaign to acquire the very best of each of our Pennsylvania Impressionists, and this Garber mural was in a gym in Atco, Pennsylvania, completely stained, completely cigarette burned, and it was rescued and restored, and as you say, it graces our Putman Smith wing. We don't have any other murals. You're right, you can step into it. It's to the Delaware Water Gap.
Yeah.
It is transforming. It glitters. It really lights up that particular gallery.
You feel like you're literally right there on the ground in the painting.
You got it.
It's just fantastic.
It is. And Garber really is our star. His granddaughter is on our board. She has kept his spirit alive and documented. We have a very significant collection of Garber paintings, and we have an exhibit on view right now focused on Garber with a major painting that we have on loan from the Philadelphia Museum of Art called Tanis.
Oh, excellent. Now, in your collection, do you overall have a kind of a focus on any particular periods or one or more periods in your collection? What would you say is your focus?
I would say that the majority of our permanent collection is focused on late 19th, early 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
But now that we're bringing more recognition to the kinds of artists who work in wood and ceramic and metals, they're much more contemporary. So there's a little bit of a balance there, but I do have to say that probably early 20th century is our major focus.
Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about the furniture you have there in the collection.
We are so fortunate. George Nakashima's studio is only about 8 miles from the Michener Art Museum. His daughter, Mira, also serves on our board. She's an accomplished woodworker. She and her family donated a very serene and beautiful room outfitted with Nakashima furniture and the typical Japanese surroundings that really lend itself to meditation.
Mm-hmm.
The Nakashima studio is accessible to visitors to the Michener Art Museum. Philip Powell, another very accomplished wood crafter, is from this area. He's no longer living. Mm-hmm. But Robert Whitley, who's 95, is living and alive and well, and we have numerous pieces by him also on view.
That is excellent. And tell us a little bit about the arts and crafts that you have there that are kind of representative of the Bucks County tradition.
Well, you know, when you think about Wharton Eschrick, he and Nakashima are really the kings. And then there are other artists who take their cue from just the smooth wood. So we have wood turners such as David Ellsworth. We have ceramicists such as Robert. Now I'm going to forget his last name, so we'll just flew over that.
Ceramics, yeah,
exactly.
There we go.
And we have Paul Evans, who is renowned for his metalwork. He created furniture that then evolved into beautiful wall tableaus, different burnishings. So we're very fortunate to represent artists who have not had their due yet in art history, but we're giving them a voice.
Excellent. You may have heard of the name, a glassworker named Dale Chalulli.
Of course.
They're big on Dale down in the Delaware Art Museum. Do you have any of his works there?
We do not have any Dale Chihuly works here, but boy, it would be wonderful to do a temporary exhibit. I think it would be a big draw.
Mm-hmm. It's very popular. Many museums only showcase a small portion of their art collection at any one time. How often do you rotate works in and out for display?
We actually do it on a regular basis. Our curatorial staff is very creative. Our primary space devoted to the Pennsylvania Impressionists is our buyer's gallery, and that is installed salon style, which means we've stacked the paintings from ceiling to floor so that we can fit in probably 50 more works than we normally could. But also, our curatorial staff looks at our permanent collection when we are creating exhibitions drawn from other sources to see if we have work that also speaks to whatever theme of the exhibition is. So we are bringing work in and out of the permanent collection on a regular basis, so our visitors will always see something new.
When a visitor comes there this week, what are they going to see? What do you want to point out to them as in terms of your current exhibits?
Well, in addition to Garber in spring, this is the last month for our Philadelphia in Style installation, which is a collaboration with Drexel University, the Penny and Robert Fox Historic Costume Collection. We have 35, I would say, I'm not going to call them costumes because they're dresses and outfits that span 100 years of fashion. So that's up. We're about to open Lloyd Nye, local color. Lloyd Nye, another underappreciated Bucks County artist. That opens this coming Friday.
Excellent.
And then Tete-a-Tete, Conversations in Photography, is the result of a current initiative we have in photography. We have a photography fellow, and she's drawing pieces from our permanent collection and pairing them with working photographers of today and providing a balance and a counterbalance. So some very exciting visual treats.
Very, very nice. Tell us a little bit about your speaker series.
Oh, my goodness. Every single exhibition has complimentary programming, and we bring in artists, curators, scholars, musicians, all kinds of art makers. So we have a regular series, too numerous to mention. You'll have to go on our website to see everything that's going to be happening.
and by the way, your website is?
MichnerArtMuseum.org.
Very good. And are there any special exhibits or activities planned for the coming months?
Well, I think this summer will be very, very special. We are featuring an exhibition based on the photography of Steve McCurry. He is best known for The Afghan Girl.
Oh, yes.
And
very well known.
You know the National Geographic?
Yes. Oh, yes. A hauntingly beautiful picture.
Hauntingly beautiful.
Yes. Yes.
Steve McCurry maintains a studio in Exton, Pennsylvania, and he was inspired by James Michener's novel, Caravan. And over these past 30 to 40 years, he's been going to Afghanistan and documenting that country. We are featuring those photographs.
Excellent.
We also have an exhibit by Jonas Lee based on the Panama Canal.
Oh, fascinating.
He was there to document the original building of the Panama Canal, and of course they're now widening it, so it's very relevant. So that will be on view this summer as well.
That is great. Lisa, thank you so much for being on the show today. I welcome all of our listeners to visit the James Michener Art Museum in Doylestown. You will love it. Be sure to tune in next week, Wednesday, June 8th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, when we'll be speaking with Corey Amsler, Vice President for Collections at the Mercer Museum. Thank you all for joining us today for Living History.